Hold on, I'm recording. Go ahead.
All right. Hi, my name is Rebecca Thompson Hitt, and I am co-director here with Kate White and Sally Deer Healy, who I'm sure went to get a snack really quick before, because we've had a series of meetings today already. So, but today we're here to talk about somatics. And somatics is Kate's, this is like the thing that Kate loves more than anything. I mean, it's like birth psychology, and then there's the body, and there's the way that our body interprets these things. There's, where we tend to be very heady. Let's learn about this thing, but we need to remember that we are in a body. And somatics, and we're going to be talking about, Kate is going to be sharing with us birth patterns, birth sequences, imprinting, and this is one of my absolute favorite topics. So, Kate, if you don't know Kate, of course you just shared your screen, so I lost my notes. Hang on. So, Kate, as I said, is the co-director of education with me here, and she is an award-winning cranial sacral and massage therapist, prenatal and early childhood educator. So she has spent years and years and years studying the body, studying somatics, and learning how to apply this in her practice and then in our program. So, Kate, I want to go ahead and turn it over. I'm so pleased that you're here and that you're sharing this information with us, because it really, as I said, if you were born once, this information is going to be interesting to you.
Okay, yes, thank you so much, Rebecca. Thank you for the introduction and for being here and being part of our backup and helping to make APA great. APA is really so grateful to have someone like you and all of you. I'm really glad that you're here, and I want to give you all a really warm welcome. And I'm going to go ahead and get us started. So just like Rebecca said, this is one of my biggest passions is somatics. And because birth psychology works a lot with a body experience, and with, like Rebecca said, we were all born once. And so this is one of our earliest memories in our body. And when we're trying to learn what birth psychology is about, you necessarily have to include these parts about who we are inside our bodies, what have been our experiences. So today we're talking about the birth sequence. But first, just want to welcome everyone and just invite you to arrive. So just feel your seat, feel you're sitting on. I'm going to invite you just to close your eyes and feel your breath. And just it's just a moment of settling before we start. And just notice, are you sitting more on one side than the other today? I can feel I'm sitting more on my left side. And then just notice your feet. Wiggle your toes. And your breath. And seeing if you can just feel yourself just settle, just dropping down. Notice spreading, seeing if there's any width that you can feel in your body. And then just notice the mid space. Like imagine you have a column rising up inside your body, and just bring your attention to the mid space, the middle of you. And then I'm just going to invite you just to open your eyes. And then just look at my slide and imagine that you're sitting there at the beach, taking in the horizon, feeling the warm air, smelling the ocean, and really just taking in the beauty of the world there. Yeah. So today, like I said, we're talking about the birth sequence. And I'm going to go ahead and move us through my slideshow. It's not very long. And then I'm going to open it up for discussion. So everything unfolds in a sequence. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. It can start with a gesture, like I can move my hand up and down. It's the beginning of the gesture and the completion of the gesture. And often it starts with an intention, like I'm intending to move my hand or to pick up my telephone or to write something. I have to pick up my pen and do it. But sequencing like this has been a part of our life for a long, long time. It can be as simple as noticing a sunrise or a sunset. Every day we have this cycle. It's a sequence. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. In birth and in pregnancy, there is a sequence also. You first have to have conception before implantation and embryo. It can't be the other way around. So there's always an order, a sequence, a way things unfold is how I like to think about it. In the birth, we know that it's one of our first major somatic imprints. Often somatic experiences can be overwhelming or intense in utero as well. So conception all the way through down into the embryo also has sequencing that we can look at. But today we're just going to be talking about the birth sequence. So here's what we know about birth. There's an inlet in the pelvis. So that's just the very top part. And then there's the negotiating the turn inside the pelvis. And then there's when you come to the outlet, which is when you are just born. And then you can pause. Ideally, there's a little bit of a pause and not a rush. Often there is a rush. Those of you who have been born here, maybe you've noticed that inside yourself, or you are part of a birth as a doula or as a midwife, there can often be a speed up at this place. But ideally there's a pause, and then there's coming on to the mom, ideally. So this is the integration phase. So in birth psychology, we've been able to name it as a beginning, a middle, and an end. An inlet to navigating the pelvis to the outlet, and then integration. So we have a whole sequence that we go through. I'm going to show you the sequence, and then I'm going to unpack it a little bit with you. So I'm just going to invite you to notice your body while I show you the sequence. And this is my favorite YouTube of showing the sequence. This is for a head down baby. I don't know if there are any breech babies on the call today, but I was a breech baby. And breech is a lot different, and it can be, especially if you're a footling breech. But the birth sequence is, there's not very many breech babies in the world. There's about 3-4% of us are come in as breech. And I know we have a lot of C-sections, so I'm going to say that this is the ideal birth sequence, head down for head down babies. And this is what we're looking at. So with a C-section birth, it is also an imprint. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. But I just want to invite you to notice your body while you're watching this sequence. And I'm going to show it twice. It's pretty short. Oh. All right. I'm going to take you to the YouTube of it. I'm going to have to get out of the PowerPoint. Okay. I'm going to pull it over into the window. Can you all see the YouTube?
Scroll down.
There? Good?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. So I have to move everything around a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to show it one more time, okay? That for everyone? Did anyone notice any sensations while you were watching that? Anybody got their hand up, Rebecca?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi, it's Monica. Well, what came up for me was that I was born with a fraternal twin who asphyxiated at birth. And so whenever I look at material like this, I'm always wondering what she was doing in her sac and what the order of things were and the dynamics behind that imprint of having experienced that so close up, and how that disturbed this whole sequence for myself.
Yeah, no, that's a huge question. Absolutely. For twin loss, that's how I got interested in all of this, was listening to stories of William Emerson mm-hmm. and talking about how that impacted him. So absolutely, it can impact the sequence. So the short answer is yes. And I won't go into the twin loss pattern right now, but if we have time later, maybe.
Sure.
Thank you. Anybody else have any response to watching the birth sequence? I'm seeing in the chat.
I do, Elizabeth. Well, I noticed during this, the first time I just watched it through, the second time I was floored by the way the baby's head and shoulder goes back and forth, and my heart started beating really quickly. And I know I was stuck at the shoulders. And I've seen these videos a few times and I've never gotten it. And I just can't understand. I can't physically move my body to try to figure out how that's done. But this time it was slow enough, and I'm so glad you repeated it. I'd love to see it like six more times, but I'm sure we don't have time for that. It was really, well, quite amazing how the body remembers.
Yeah,
everything.
It's true.
Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah, Sally has a comment.
Sally, you want to come on?
I've watched this a number of times before. The comment that I made was I felt a sense of like constriction in my throat and almost of like not having air. And I've seen it probably 15 times before, but you invited us to sort of be with our bodies and view it. So, you know, not knowing anything about my birth, I found that very interesting. I wonder if there's something there that I'm just not, haven't been aware of.
Yeah, you're having a somatic memory, an implicit memory rise for recognition. So quite possibly, yes.
If I may chime in, I was once in a healing class where a 70-year-old man had re-experienced his birth, and coming down the birth canal, he encountered something that constricted his breathing. And when the practitioner symbolically removed it in this new safe reenactment, he was able to get past that blockage and realize that that was probably the source of chronic asthma for 70 years.
Wow.
How he would have healed after that. But in my healing work with womb twins, these imprints are worked on very specifically, and there is healing that can be done. And it's sort of like exposure therapy. You know, you go back to the scene of the crime, so to speak, where the trauma happened, and you, by expressing your feelings about it, by identifying your feelings about it, and being able to discuss them in a safe way, like in a forum like this, it definitely helps change the memory of the imprint. So that you update your memory bank every time, that it's a safe memory around that same trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just awareness. So we're just expanding our consciousness around the patterns. So I'll go ahead and talk a little bit more about the sequence, and then I'll talk about some more specifics.
So, Kate, there's one more comment. Heidi's making, the whole presentation got blurry. It was actually very clear, and then at one point it shifted, and so like the slide that we're all looking at is really blurry.
Wow, it's really clear here. I don't know what to say. Do you want me to come? It would have to end the recording, but I could come out and come back in. I don't know what happened.
Or even stop share, because it was okay. Stop share and then just reshare.
Okay.
Thanks. I thought that was just me.
I know. I was like, do I need to get my glasses?
Is it clear now?
Yes, that's better.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, when I had to stop and then grab the YouTube, I really wanted you to see that one.
Yeah.
And they say that there are more, that there's other ones you can watch, but I like that one a lot. It has that nice music and there's no narration. There's no one telling you what's happening. So you can feel and notice. Are there any other messages, Rebecca?
Katie.
Katie? What? You want me to stop and listen here? Is there someone coming on?
Well, I'm saying Katie made a comment, so I didn't know if Katie wanted to share what she said in the chat.
Yeah. Katie, you want to come in?
I'm curious about this pelvic bowel engagement part of it. Are you going to go into any detail about
it? I am.
Okay, good.
All right, should I just keep going, Rebecca? Are we all complete now with people's remarks, or...?
I think so.
All right. So I'm going to go into detail about the sequence. And it's what I want you just to see here on the inside circle is some of the actual feelings and states that we go into when we're understanding the sequence. On the outside is the names of the places where we see it in the actual sequence of birth. So in the intention is connected to the inlet. And so we at APA, for those of you who are our guests here, we believe in the baby's experience and that the baby has experiences in utero that can affect the way that they perceive the world and that they the way they have experiences, relationships, beliefs, and whole parts of our life can be still working with our earliest experiences. So here you can just see I have intention at the top. And intention is so important. It's the beginning of the sequence. And so babies do intend to be born. It's not something that, I think I'm just going to wait until I'm pushed out. There is a sense of I choose to be born. And for those of you who are working with birth or who have had babies, I just want, as I move forward here, for everyone just to feel their seat and their feet, because I might be naming parts of your experience. Often when we have intention in birth, if you've been induced, for example, or if induction is a part of your sequencing, just know that that's an override or somehow affecting intention setting. So we intend to be born. It's an intention. It's the beginning of the sequence. And intention is so important. So whenever anyone comes to me for therapy, I'll often will ask them, so what is your intention? And so everything can unfold from that. Then there's a preparation phase. So this is an important part of the sequence. So you just notice, like for yourself, like if you make a decision to go somewhere, like we're going to unpack traveling, for example. If you make an intention to take a trip, how is it that you prepare? Or say writing a paper at college or in high school. How do you prepare? Do you really do it to detail, or do you slapdash, throw some things together in a suitcase, and out the door you go? I mean, and just also notice your pacing. Are you slowing down? Are you very thorough, or do you speed up? There are so many questions to ask about the sequence, really. And in the actual birth sequence, that's in navigating right as you head into the inlet, you're engaging in the inlet to go ahead and complete your action, which is navigating the mid-pelvis. So that's the turn. So you're working with your body in the turn. And if you are a C-section baby, sometimes you engage in this part of the birth sequence also. Or if you were a planned C-section, maybe you were not even engaged. There's a lot in that pattern. So just feel your seat and feel your breath, right? So then when you do the action and you follow through, so that's really navigating to the outlet. So a lot happens in the outlet, as you all know. That's the becoming from inside to outside. So often that's a threshold that we cross over, and we're moving through, coming out, being seen, being met. And there's a whole quality to all of that that can show up in our relationships and how we get things done. Ideally, there's a pause. And even in our sequencing from conception, there's a mystery here. Like, we know that when once conception happens, then to have 24 hours, nothing happens. There's just conception. They don't immediately start dividing and multiplying those cells. There's a pause. And in John and Anna Chitty's work, they call it the long holy time. So that here's the mystery. There's a pause. Ideally, here in this sequence, it'd be nice if we could have a pause. But often there's a speed up because for some reason there's a lot of anxiety about the baby or something's going on here. Ideally, there's a pause. And then for integration, best practices for mom and baby to have that first hour after birth. In fact, the whole policy now is all around the baby-friendly movement. And so we know that this is a part of the sequence. So just to name it, it's intention, preparation, action, follow through, integration, and rest. That's the complete cycle. So the cycle of satisfaction, the person who named it that was a woman named Annie Brooke. And she did a complete analysis of this as a movement therapist. And I began to apply the cycle of satisfaction for being with babies and watching how they explore their world. So for a baby, they'll navigate, they'll want to explore, they'll see a toy, they'll try to get to the toy. If they get to the toy, the way they appreciate that toy is they'll mouth it, right? And then they'll rest, and then they'll see another toy. You know, it's a whole sequence that we can apply to how people do things, how they get things done, and how they feel about it. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of these patterns, right? So again, here's the actual sequencing. And then there's this deciding to go on a trip. So just as we're sitting here, and we're just recognizing perhaps we have a sequencing that we've never recognized before, does anyone want to share, especially someone who hasn't shared before? Anyone want to share about what they're noticing about this whole pattern of how is it that you do things? How do you go on a trip? How do you pack? Do you travel there? And is it satisfying for you to go, or is it hard? And then when you get there, how do you reorient? Do you unpack quickly? Do you leave things in your suitcase? Do you just put your stuff down and go out quickly? What's your pattern? Anybody want to share? Let's take one person. Rebecca, is anyone wanting to share?
Stephanie is raising her hand.
Stephanie.
There we go. I find so much of this so fascinating, and especially through the birth sequence and watching it again, asking us to check in and how my own breath changed during the video. And then, you know, when you relate this to a trip, my preparation for the immediate trip, of course, maybe there's the excitement months before, weeks before you've planned, but that I get so like agitated and I don't know which thing to start with. Do I start to pack? Do I, you know, I find it very, very fascinating. I was born premature 5 weeks. I don't think I wanted to come out then, but I also felt, I know there was a lot of internal pain. My mother smoked. There was not a comfortable relationship with my mother and father. And so I just, again, I find this deeply fascinating. And even right now, just looking at this slide, going through it, I just have this like, oh my gosh, this relates to my whole life and how I do things. And then going through the cycle just now, I'm really just completely fascinated. And Kate, your comment just now about how you relate this to dealing with babies, I just think that's brilliant. And again, how we can pull this into dealing with ourselves, and whether it's a trip or how we deal with our partner in unpacking a problem that we might have together or whatever. I think this cycle is just so profound. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing. That's being a premature baby is what Franklin Sills, who's one of our osteopaths that helped teach cranial work, would call difficult territory. And it sounds like you had a difficult space inside too when you were inside your mom. So I just want to say, and I'm so sorry. And you made it. You did a pretty good job. I'm seeing you sitting there really beautiful and present. So thank you. Yeah. Oh, it looks like, yeah, thanks for sharing. Looks like we have another hand raised there. Yeah, thank you. I'm going to unpack more of the experience, and we'll feel free to come back to talk more about that pattern in a little bit. Brittany, I see your hand is up. Just go ahead.
Yeah, she helped me realize something when she was just speaking, but I was 4 weeks premature, and I find myself very impatient when I'm ready to go on a trip. I pack really early, and I just, like, my whole life just sits on hold until I get there. And so I don't want to do anything until I get there. And once I'm there, I just go for it, and I have fun, and I do what I want to do. And I've had 4 children, including twins. And I kind of feel that my first two were inductions, but my last was a home birth. And, she just was so different from my experience. She just was very slow, 27 hours of labor, but extremely slow, but not painful at all. She was just kind of slow and steady, and I was 42 weeks, and so she was just such an opposite of me. Just made me think about that. So,
yeah. Well, thanks for sharing. I don't know if you can. I don't know if you notice how it is that she does things. Is she a slow processor? Does she do things much slower than you?
She is, out of all of my children, actually. She just is. She's very gentle. She doesn't run like they used to, like they did when they were younger. She is definitely. I don't know how to explain it. She's just a sweet girl. She's sitting next to me, but she's just so sweet and has like the nicest demeanor. But yeah, she's kind of been slower to talk and everything else, but she's just very intelligent as well. But but yeah, she was slower in everything she's done. So
yeah, well, what we found out about birth sequencing is that these kinds of patterns can really influence how you do things. They can influence your pacing and your tempo. And they can influence how you do things. And it's been fascinating to ask people a little bit more about their sequencing. And when people come to see me for healing, the sequence is a really major part of how I do intake or how I bring awareness to what's happening for someone. Because we all have a sequence, we all have a pattern, we all have ways that we do things. And then there can be hallmarks of edges if there's been trauma, but sometimes it's not trauma. It's just the way we do things. And it can really be empowering to claim, this is my pattern. And often when I'm working with someone, if there is an edge, we just decrease the potency of it so that it's still there. And the person I've learned so much about this from is Anna Chitty. And we know that we, on the inside, we have this blueprint for health and well-being. And if we have an overwhelming sequence that happens to us from the very start, like a twin loss or a difficult conception or in utero experiences that are overwhelming or birth, we just decrease the charge. And then it becomes a part of our gift, and it becomes a part of, we can have choice around how we engage in our sequencing. And I've found that for myself that some of the early overwhelming pieces, once I've integrated them into myself, that it's a part of now who I am and how I can really bring forward my purpose and gift. And I can talk a little bit more about that at the end.
So, Kate, it's the slide's blurry again, so we've gotten that feedback. And then Sheila was wondering if this sequencing content will be included in the PPM training you'll be doing in 2019.
Yes. Yes, it's a major part of somatic training. Let me stop share and then share again. And there are others who offer the training as well. I mean, Ray Castellino has been one of the ones that has offered so much education around these somatic patterns. But Wendy Ann McCurdy also, and she's right now in the middle of a sequence teaching us about how to work with babies and how to recognize their sequencing and how we come from inside to outside is a major bodily felt memory. And everyone has one. And Dennis Hertenstein, who's now our president, whenever he gives lectures and he has his doll and pelvis, he just says, look, I'm going to talk about birth, and everyone here has been born. So just know that you might have that memory. And so, especially when I'm talking about it now, you may have a memory of it inside yourself. But you know, just know that if you can feel it and name it and get some resourcing around it if it gets overwhelming. But it's up for healing. So like, I can tell you a lot of stories about how I've learned about sequencing, but I want to get through our presentation and then we can open it up for more discussion as well. Rebecca, is there anyone else that needs to speak right now, or can I continue?
I think you can go ahead. I mean, there was Sam who said, I have no information about my birth, and so I'm looking forward to unpacking my packing experience. I love that.
Yeah, you can go to your mom and ask questions about how it was for you. And I know from working with my mother, who's on our call today, by the way, I've asked her a lot of questions about how it was for me, especially being a breech baby. And back then, they didn't know so much. They didn't have, like, ultrasounds and things. But it's been a fascinating journey to understand birth and birth sequencing and who we are. And also know that we, like, some of what we've taught here is that we come from a spiritual place. We are a being of consciousness, a unit. And we're here, you know, inside our bodies. And there are other things here besides sequencing. There's the blueprint of who we are. So it's really feeling that and recognizing that first is often where we start. When we're starting to do deeper work, what are the resources? What helps you feel good? And I often start with that somatic feeling of feeling present. And then for those of you who are thinking about this, just look around your room and look with your adult eyes and give yourself some squeezes and know that there's a little one within. That's one of the early conscious early parenting things we teach our parents, that there is a little one within And it can often be ignited by when we have our own children or in a lecture like this where I'm really evoking it. Yeah.
So Sam went on to say, sadly, my mother has no memory of my birth. And then said, I was adopted from birth and I was the third unwanted pregnancy for her. So it's all locked deep in denial for her.
Wow. Well, adoption is a very difficult pattern. That's a difficult territory there. And we can definitely talk about that. Some of the more healing moments can be recognition around what could have happened. There's been a lot of there are things called like open or aware adoptions and really speaking with the baby and helping the baby understand that there's going to be a transfer to another couple. But I would invite you, if you've had experiences like that, just to go very slowly. I'm going to talk a little bit about healing therapies at the end of our talk. So I'm just going to continue on. But thank you for sharing, Sam. I know that that's a very difficult birth. And being an unwanted baby is probably one of the most difficult patterns that we have. So before I continue, I would just like to encourage you and others just to feel for a moment being wanted. If there's someone there who really wants to be with you, who sees you, who gets you, just imagine their face. And even if it's a pet, I work here in Charlottesville, Virginia. It's horse country here. A lot of people have horses that really get them. Sometimes it can be a beloved dog or an auntie. My grandmother really got me. I really think about that sometimes. So I just want to invite you to think about someone right now who really gets you and imagine that they're holding your hand or they're there with you. Okay, I'm going to just continue on and we'll again talk about these patterns in a bit. All right, so here we are. Sequences can be interrupted. They can be skipped. And they can be renegotiated. So oftentimes when we're working with sequencing at birth, you can be engaged in being born and then there have to be an intervention. And this is really tricky also because often interventions are needed. So there could be a feeling of the overwhelm coming in and then the feeling of feeling saved or feeling helped. Those two things can be put together. So often when I'm with someone, I would just slow down the sequencing and help have people feel into those two parts, like especially the part that feels helped. Because often when we're working with sequencing, we want to know what was resourcing, what was helpful. And I'm hearing noise there. And then sometimes we skip over a sequence. So one of the two most common patterns I've found, and these are just common, is procrastination and then not integrating. So procrastination is where, you know, you put something off to the end. So there's very little in the preparation phase. So if you look at the whole sequencing, you can intend to write your paper or do your homework, and then you get to the place where you have to do it. And it can often be like, well, I know you put it off and put it off and put it off. Or maybe you don't even do it. So, and you go right into the actual action. Like no research for your paper. You think you can just do it. No study for the final exam. You just go to do it. It can be a part of a sequencing. You skip over the preparation phase or you get stuck in it. So these are some of the questions that we have to ask, because I have a whole series of questions around how we do things. And another really common pattern I see that's skipped is integration. And I think that this is definitely one of my patterns where I feel like I love intention. I'll set my intention. I love preparation. I'm really thorough. I love the action phase. I'm such a doer. And then I follow through, I get it done, and then I'll leap on to the next project instead of just saying, wow, I did that. Goodbyes were often really hard for me. I would often just skip the goodbye. In fact, sometimes I can be in my workout or getting close to the end of something, and there'll be 1 minute left, and I'll be like, oh, that's enough. You know, there's a way that I don't, I'll go all the way through, complete, and then really take in that I've completed. And I've had to work to break that pattern, and I have done pretty good. So, but really recognizing. So in the sequencing of birth, a lot of us were taken away from our mothers at birth. And some of us were put in isolates, or it's definitely a lot happens to a baby at the integration phase. Like, unless they're really honored and put on their mother for the golden hour or the magic hour, you know, a lot happens for a baby. Things speed up in that phase. A lot of weighing and washing and shots sometimes. And so what we've been trying to teach is really welcoming a baby, really acknowledging that they made it, having them come on their mother, and then giving them those precious moments of awakening, arriving, feeling, not immediately cutting the cord, and just allowing the baby to reorient to being on the outside. Because this is about coming from inside to outside. And these really important places can be renegotiated. And that's what a lot of birth process work is about. So these are the steps that I've been working on with people, and they're actually more detailed questions that you can ask about the birth sequence. So you first sort of recognize the sequence, and then how is it that you set intentions or prepare, follow action, follow through integration? Where do you skip a stage? Or are there places where you rush? Like, that was definitely one of my patterns also. I was born very fast, and I had to work on really slowing down. Because often my pacing is faster than those people who are around me. So I had to learn a lot just to soften, slow down, really feel my body, and allow myself to have the feeling of I can speed up or I can slow down. And just know that becoming aware and conscious of the pattern is the most important. Right. Are there places where you get stuck? So there was someone who shared a little bit about, was Elizabeth, right, about the shoulder dystocia. A lot of us, you know, some of us did have a place where we may have gotten stuck, and that can be coupled with an intervention. And this is a common, I really work a lot with people who come in with shoulder dystocia, often in that pattern. That's a really difficult pattern. That's a place where a lot of things can happen, a lot of speed up, a lot of difficulty for the baby. And so often that leads to an intervention, and then there's a feeling, a lot of things can speed up after that. So are there places where you get stuck? So then often in C-section, there's this place too. If you were an emergency C-section, this is where stuckness can happen. So for those of you who've noticed this pattern inside yourself, I just want to invite you to give your legs a squeeze. Give yourself a squeeze. Often in the stuck place, there can be a lot of things going on in the nervous system. You can feel both sped up and stuck. I just want to invite you to remember that you're here on this talk with me, and you're not stuck here. Hopefully, you're here. So I'm just inviting you just to notice your body. And the next part of this is really asking you some questions as educators and as professionals. But most importantly, I just want to say there are ways we can make repair around this. And this is what I've been trained to do, and I'm sure several other people on this call are also trained to help people recognize their sequencing related to birth. Because often in the birth sequence, there can be times when you're ecstatic, you're like, I really am loving this, and I want to be born, and I can't wait. Like, I know that's in my sequencing, right? And it can be like, oh, this just feels like I'm going to die here. This is a life-death place. So that often happens too. But I really want to name that in any birth sequence, there can be moments of pure relationship and connection, and there can be places of overwhelm. And there can be that ecstatic place, too, that I just talked about. And it can be fun. So there's a lot in a birth sequence. And often when I was first learning birth process work, the people would only be focusing on the overwhelming pieces. And I've got to tell you, it's much more than that. So really, I would invite you just to broaden and notice what was resourcing for you in this sequencing. So what does this mean for education in our field? So our professional program, the PPNE program, trains people to be educators and not therapists. So I would like just to invite you just to notice, like, how would you do this as an educator? What does sequencing mean for you? And when you're in an audience or with someone else, just noticing the dynamics of it. How do people come together? How are you putting together your classes? When you're preparing for a seminar, what do you do? And knowing that that is a very important part of the sequence. Or do you like to really provide hospitality? Or do you just want to come in the room and get started? Like noticing your own sequencing. Do you speed up? Do you slow down? And how is it for you? The place where I see the most activation is in the outlet. As you're completing, how is that for you? And I know I've given presentations where I don't resource people and it can be harder for them. And often at the outlet, there can be a feeling of feeling sped up. So I've had to really help people slow down and then just notice and really name that there are some positive places in the sequencing. But it's just an invitation for you to notice, right? Just a few more slides and then I'll open it up for questions and any testimonies that people want to say about their own sequencing. Just, I really want to invite you as an educator just to notice. And what does this mean for a parent? Maybe some of us on this call have children, and we already noticed that Brittany shared about her own differences in the births that she had. So you're going on an outing. So sometimes with children, they have a hard time making transition. Like a big part of my job is helping families that have had difficult births, or they bring their child to me saying, we're stuck in a pattern. It's overwhelming for all of us. Will you help us out? So I often ask, how are transitions? And you often have to kind of help them recognize the birth sequence and how that can have an impact on you, on the way you go out the door. Another place I see the sequencing come up is going to bed. Sleep is a really huge issue. I'm not going to talk about that right now, but I know that being with families that have had difficult births, the sequence of going to bed can really be stressful. So I'll often will help parents resource and give them things to work with the nervous system during this time. This is a transition that many of families that come see me need help with. And then there's this whole idea of crossing thresholds, like even going out across the threshold of the door. And the story I like to tell here is many years ago, one of my first families, she brought her baby to me. Baby was maybe 3 at the time or 4. And she had an emergency C-section. And she was one of these moms who wanted a home birth and was eventually transferred. So this is another place where we could spend a lot of time. Just that transition in and of itself is so hard for some moms going from a home birth to a hospital. And then she really had to push and push a long time, but the baby wasn't coming out. So she had a C-section. And when the baby came out, it was obvious that there was just wasn't room in her outlet for her to come out. The baby's head had been really imprinted by some of the bones there, that there just wasn't room for her to come through the pelvis. But I want to tell you the way this mother made sense of the C-section for her baby. She said, my baby wanted community. She wanted people around her when she was born. And sure enough, when she was born via C-section, there were a lot of people in that room. And I felt like that was a very healthy way for this mother to make sense of the birth. Because whatever you do in the sequencing, whatever way you want to make sense of what happened, it's noticing what happened and then have you make sense of it. So this baby, when she first brought her to me, she would always stop at the door. She stopped and she would cross, or she would have feelings about crossing over a threshold. But over time, the baby got really a lot more ease, especially unpacking and making sense of the sequence. So that's one example of how you can make something, find a resource in the story and feel it. And I've already talked a little bit about learning sequencing, but that's another place where we really see that it comes up. So making repairs, the first step is awareness. And a lot of times when, like I say, working with families, trying to establish a rhythm. So over a period of time here, as students in the PPNE program and all the somatic lectures I've given, last time I think it was, I talked about pacing and tempo. Just really understanding your own pacing and understanding how it is when you slow down and speed up. So a lot of the games when I'm working with parents that have children, I'll make sure that they recognize the speed up place and then really help with the slow down place. Our culture is not really good at the slow down in America. So really helping them speed up, have play, and then slow down and pause. So really working with pausing and creating rhythm. And we do this through play. And then really, these are some of the games that we play a lot. Like I have, this is one family I worked with. They've given me permission to use this picture. We're going through tunnels. Anything that's inside to outside. Finding womb games where, like, does your child love to be in a tent? And how is it when they're in there? Or do they, like, no, do not put me in that tent. I had a whole center for a while when I lived in Vermont, and I had one little boy, every time he would go in the tent, he would panic, and his mother would reach in and grab and pull him out. And he was a C-section baby. So that was just a little example of his pattern. So there's a lot of ways that these can show up. And then for healing yourself, you can look at birth process. And there's a lot of birth process groups that are coming up all over our country now as the students of Ray Castellino and Myrna Martin are offering their seminars. Or you can find a therapist that really understands birth process. And if you need one, I can help you find one. And finally, there's somatic experiencing. So this is a great, especially if someone understands sequencing. But what we're really looking at is your nervous system. Where do you speed up and slow down? What things have been coupled together? Do you have any impulses to help yourself, whether to defend, protect, or move through? These are all things that somatic experiencing can help you recognize. Okay, so I would like to just pause here and then we can take some questions. I'm going to stop sharing so I can see you, and we have about 10 minutes or so. I'm willing to stay a little bit extra to take some more questions.
So Monica had a question about C-section and intention.
Mm-hmm. Monica?
So.
Thank you. And you just touched on the C-section story, so thank you for that. Mm. My son was born C-section. And interestingly, I thought maybe I was holding on to him out of my own separation anxiety as a womb twin survivor. Mm. I did everything I could to have a very conscious pregnancy and birth. I had a doula. I ended up being in labor for 3 days and finally having to give into the C-section. And interestingly, you know, my son is very well adjusted, very, very you know, in command of his life. And I just wondered about intention. Is that intention too, that I'm not going to go the usual way, I'm going to go another way?
Yes.
More control over this. And
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I've met C-section babies who've said, thank God they got me out of there, you know?
Yeah.
So if you don't get your birth the way, you know, as a mom, have this idea about the C-section, I've met babies who have been like, you know, I'm so glad that someone came in and helped me. And I'm guessing somewhere in his sequencing, he felt the impulse to be born. He explored his intention. And there's something in that. So, and everyone's sequencing is different and their experiences are different. And I also want to say that the temperament does play a role as well. And so it's complicated. And one of the things that has bothered me about pre and perinatal psychology is that often people will pick up on a pattern and then try and, so this is it, and I'm going to put it on others. Because it's not that at all. Like I say, sometimes in sequencing, it's really unique to that person. Mm-hmm. And it can start even preconception.
Yeah.
So I just want to, that's my caveat here. Your takeaway is that there's a sequencing is a major pattern, but there's so many shades of gray in it. There's so many variations and there's so many perceptions. So just be aware that your experience is yours and it's unique. And there may be parts of it that you haven't explored yet that may even make your life fuller, better, deeper, and whatever. So it's much, there's more to explore.
Which is why, as you said, to just be mindful and put the mm-hmm. thoughts that you want to have in there, impart mm-hmm. the energy that you need in a situation as best you can with your intuition, mm-hmm. you know? Because there's so much working against you in a hospital and, and in a birth situation. You really have to advocate for yourself and your child if you're going through a usual hospital delivery.
Sometimes. I've heard so many great stories now. Yeah. Even yesterday when we were on the call with In Utero, there was a woman that talked about a hospital there whom I'm really curious about this hospital. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I see hospitals making changes, so I just want to name that also. But thank you for your sharing, Monica. Is there someone else? Divya, I see your hand is up. Go ahead.
So I have to say a couple of things because I've been exploring it for a long time, and this is why I'm in the work that I do, and this is what drew me here as well, is that my mother tells the story is like from water back road when she was in labor for 3 days. She was isolated in a gender ward where nobody from her family was allowed to be near her. And the woman next to her was screaming in pain. So my mother spent her labor rubbing that woman's back. And once her baby was born, then I was born. And so that's the first part of my story. And the fact that I shifted from being an engineer, well, even before that, when I decided to have a baby, I knew that I wanted to be a full-time mom and that it was really important for me. But when I had my son thereafter, I knew that I didn't want to go back to engineering and I chose to be a doula. And then my son was induced. And I feel that, I just feel that there was something in me and in him that got back. So I followed it further. And I'd acted as a perinatal therapist just pursuing that, what is it? So as I'm hearing you right now, a lot actually comes up for me as well. But one of the things I feel as a doula is that we're not listening to the conversation between the mother's body and...
Divya.
Always follow the cue of the body. I mean, for me... that when I'm helping somebody in labor, I also feel it in my body.
Divya, you keep freezing and dropping out. I can hear every little bit, just a little bit. So now I see that you're frozen here on our screen. It must be the internet in India. I'm sorry, you're just frozen. Can I come back to you? Hopefully I can see that Brittany has her hand up, but I'll come back to you, Divya. Go ahead, Brittany.
Hi there. So yeah, a couple things came up for me as well. And I think her name's Divya in India. She kind of was touching based on what was coming up for me as well. One thing was with my birth, my mother's life was really stressful. And I think I've spent my, I was born 4 weeks early, and I think I just wanted out. I wanted to get away from her, which is interesting. And I realize I've spent kind of my whole life trying to get further and further from my mom. And I lived with my aunt when I was in for a few years as a young child, from like kindergarten through second grade. And then again in high school, I left and moved with my aunt. And then I moved as far away from my mom as I could for college. I went from San Diego up to Northern California, and then just kept going north. And now I live 4,000 miles from my mom. And I feel like it's kind of been a pattern in my life. And then I bring her back into my life, and I embrace her as my mom. And then I'm like, nope, I have to be far away from you again. And so I thought that was really interesting. That just sort of came up for me. I don't know if you've seen that before in some people, but she was a smoker. She had a really poor diet. She didn't gain any weight in her pregnancy with me. And I had a difficult first month of life. So, so I kind of wonder if any of that has to play with that.
I can speak to some general patterns that you've named, and they may support you a little bit. And Brittany, I invite you, if you want to take my email address, or any of you, it's educate@birthpsychology.com. If you want to email me, I'm happy to support you after this class. But let me speak to, in general, to some of the patterns. And Divya, I think I caught some of your story. I invite you also to email me, because we're running out of time here. We're just a little bit past time. But so when there's difficulty in utero, and sometimes it can be so mysterious and impersonal, that there's less, it can be like, oh, well, my mother smoked, or she had experiences that overwhelmed me. My mother was stressed. They're just really getting now the impact of a lot of these things. And I know from talking with people over the many, like almost 20 years I've been doing this, they even prescribe smoking to some women when they were pregnant. So we know that there's a lot of lack of consciousness and unconsciousness around baby's experience in utero. And then if there's a difficult birth, like I've talked to many babies, people who understood their birth sequencing. Yes, we call it the toxic womb, and they want to get out. They want to leave. They want to get out as soon as they can, and so there is the impulse to get out as soon as they can. So that is definitely a pattern that I've seen. Often the way babies make sense of difficulty is they couple it with their mother. And so, David Barker, who's one of our greatest researchers in understanding fetal origins of adult disease, talks about experiences of, well, his work was mostly in nutrition and prematurity. I invite you to look into that research, Brittany, and other people that are here that are interested. But he says we're born into two worlds, the world of our mother and the world outside our mother. And often the way a baby will make sense of any pain or difficulty that happens during birth or in utero is that it's because the mother wanted it so. And I want to tell you that there are ways that's just the way a baby will make sense of things sometimes. And I want to put a plug in here for forgiveness and for understanding also that if our mother didn't have it at first, she couldn't give it. And so she didn't know that she should be nourishing herself and not smoking. And they didn't know that babies had experiences in utero back then. But there are ways to repair all of these things. And I just want to invite you to expand your consciousness around your patterns and know that they can be worked with. And to come back into relationship with your mother after difficulty is a beautiful thing. So I really want to tell you that these things can be healed and that there can be really beautiful experiences. You don't have to carry around these wounds your whole life. So I hope that helps you a little bit, Brittany. And I can understand why you feel the way you do. Now, I think I have time for one more question or a couple more. I'm willing to stay. I'm willing to stay a little bit longer. So, Rebecca, is there a hot question going on in the chat?
So Sally had one I thought was interesting.
Sally?
Which one, Rebecca?
I know you're like, oh my God.
I know. It's like, I found this through my PPNE work. I mean, I was constantly going, oh my gosh, how did I not know this? Oh my gosh, this makes such perfect sense. But I think the thing I said is, you know, who always knew? I hate to say goodbye to people. I will find, like, I don't do well at death. I'm horrible with death. I'm horrible with funerals. I'm horrible with saying goodbye to people. And sometimes people misinterpret that as, I don't know, like not caring or flippant. I don't know, just, you know, not being engaged when I'm really so engaged that it's really difficult for me to say goodbye. And Kate, I worked on some of this through some of my essays that you read as well about, you know, always being left and, you know, how I reacted to an ex-husband traveling all the time and everything. And so I always thought that was kind of a protection mechanism, but now I had this big, you know, kind of thing that, well, I was given away at birth and it was always known during my mother's pregnancy that I was not going to be kept by her. So it's like maybe she had difficulty saying goodbye. Remember I told you that I got to ask her those two questions, like, why did you give me away? And did you ever think of me? And her response was, when I asked the second question, yes, you know, every day. And it's just like bizarre to me now to think about how I can see so many of my own patterns. I need to work with you, Kate. I see all these patterns of, you know, we just think like we're screwed up. Right? There's something wrong with me. I'm screwed up. Why do I do this? Why do I, you know, have these certain behavior patterns when it makes sense that they just are who we are and there's ways of making repair and to just, I loved what you said. I wrote so many notes here, but it was, we can make a choice, right? About how we engage in or with our own sequencing. And I think a lot of times we just feel like victims when really there's tremendous empowerment in what you're talking about.
Absolutely. Or else I wouldn't be sitting here.
It's just so cool.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool. And a lot of it's really impersonal. And so, like, for example, the anger of a baby at her mother. I mean, I've renegotiated births between mums and babies and then the baby to say to the baby, your mother never wanted that for you. And the mother probably suffered too. And I would say, and we never wanted that for you. And though for someone who's had your experience, Sally, I mean, it's rich, it's very layered. And so I would just invite you to go slowly into the layers. And my very first teacher was Carlton Terry. Well, actually, William Emerson was my first teacher in pre and perinatal work. But his student, Carlton Terry, was another man. I've done his training. One of the very first things he said was, our job is to expand our consciousness around our patterns. That's the first step. And just even doing that and understanding that it's a sequence, it's a pattern. And then draining the charge out of some of the patterns. And they can be layered and coupled. They saved my life, you know, but it really hurt, you know. Those are the two things. We uncouple those and we feel into them. And that's why the therapist is very, a lot of us have been through a lot of training. Mm-hmm. But just understanding if you can just drain the charge out of it, and then it becomes like art. Mm-hmm. It can become part of your gift, and then you can absolutely help someone understand it. Because when we're looking at trauma-informed care, you don't ask what's wrong with you. You ask what happened. to you. And then healing is about making sense of what happened to you. And it sounds like my little talk today put another little notch in that making sense for you, Sally, and perhaps others of you here today.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what I'm seeing over in the chat is, mm-hmm. you know, thank yous and, you know, just so much thinking that's going into it. And I know that there are other comments that we haven't gotten to. So as Kate said, I encourage you to reach out, send Kate an email, educate@firstpsychology.com, and, you know, continue the conversation if you need.
Right. And come and be a part of APA's Facebook group, because it can be really empowering to come and see. We have some amazing things on our website at birthpsychology.com. There's free resources for you, articles there, book reviews, book lists, and consider becoming one of our students if you're not, because this is what we talk about as a student. And you get a mentor and you can talk about things with your mentor. So it's a really wonderful program. We're having a sale on it to the end of the month to celebrate Birth Psychology Month. Mm-hmm. And this is our last part of the birth sequence. The birth sequence is the last part of our Birth Psychology Month celebration. But we have so much going on right now. We're getting ready to launch a new classroom with new possibilities, new small courses, and then we just keep going on and on. So please become a part of our community, and thank you so much for your time today. I'm sorry if we didn't get to your question, so please email me.
And Sheila's reminding us that donating this month is also good.
So. Yes. We're trying to raise money so we can expand our programs.
Yeah, yeah. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you all for being here.
Bye now.